advise you to get off the streets as quickly as possible. It'll soon be a war up there.
And we are, as a people, opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths.
I know for a fact.
And to secret proceedings.
Weapons of mass destruction.
I have a dream.
I take the threat very seriously.
A new world order.
Your government thanks you for your participation.
You are now listening to the world famous Sofa King podcast.
Please read from sheets. I am Sofa King.
Sofa King.
Now repeat all very fast, please.
I am Sofa King.
Faster.
I am Sofa King.
No, not so fast. So. Loses meaning.
I am Sofa King. King. With Todd.
You say funny things.
All right, episode 2. I had a frittata, now I'm a lot smarter. Ready to rock and roll. Brent's drinking the Adam Pedroza Green Spot. I got the Brian Sandrini's Jameson, and we already put a hurt on that bottle.
That bottle's half gone.
Yeah. I don't think you should say we.
Yeah. Well, you drank some. I had a couple fingers of that, but I felt like you guys played a trick on me. Like, I shouldn't leave my glass unattended. That's why I made that funny face. I feel like someone put water in there or something weird. No?
No. Nobody put water in your whiskey, my friend.
No.
That would be a mean thing.
That would be cruel. That is a cruelty I would not permit.
The guest is suspect.
Yeah, he calls it brown sauce. Doesn't know any names of any brands. So we do have a guest. Are we saying his real name? Because some guests we don't. So
yeah, I'm assuming he's out of here in a couple of months. He doesn't give a shit.
Oh, okay.
I'm good.
With us today is Dr. Rene Trujillo, a true scholar, statesman,
medically, he just does Band-Aids.
Yeah.
Neosporin and Band-Aids as far as he does.
What else to throw out there? a good friend and a good wit and a Cuban.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
And that matters because we're talking about
Cuba.
Asia.
No. Cuba.
Cuba's in Asia, though, right?
No.
No.
On the tip.
It's just the tip to Asians. That's all Asians get in anyway, is just the tip.
Oh, no. So,
the whole thing is the tip.
Oh, no. It's like an egg in a little pubic bird nest.
You know what's funny is the situation where you have like two very scholarly gentlemen here, and then we got this going on.
Yeah. We have some
doctor professor.
Yeah. It's definitely
just the tip.
It's definitely a hashtag effect here. Yeah. Yeah. So, anyway, I'm drinking.
I do want to get. Yeah, you are drinking. I do want
to
get.
My birthday is this month, so fans send things to me.
So he's starting a 30-day birthday party.
30-day birthday party. My birthday is April 30th. So
hashtag 30-day birthday party.
Yep. Send them. You send your panties.
Why?
No, Terry McGee, no.
Oh, okay. No. Yeah. Oh, I thought you were saying Terry McGee, yes.
Oops. Shouldn't have said that close together. No. That shit's over.
I do want to give one shout out. In one of the episodes last week, we gave out a swag bag that's still in process to Jen Rice to thank her for making a donation on our behalf. And she actually wrote back and asked that instead of a swag bag, we give a shout out because a friend of hers has cancer and runs a blog, and the blog is supposedly really helpful in dealing with cancer and so forth. And she said, instead of giving a swag bag, can you give a shout out to his blog? Because it does help people who are dealing with cancer and so forth. So I do want to give a shout out to the blog. It's www.
That's awesome. That's a selfless act. Because people would kill for our swag bag.
Right. And she was like, no, don't. I'd rather do this. So I'm going to give her a swag bag anyway, but I'll also
No,
get
no, no. No, we say that. She don't get a swag bag.
But it's www.bendearman.net. And it's BENDEARMAN.net. So go check out BendEarMan.net. Thanks to Jen Rice. Thanks to that website for talking about cancer and so forth. So that was my one shout out for the week.
I just sent Jen Rice a message to find out what size shirt she wears.
Okay.
So I'll get that swag
back. That was personal.
Together.
Yeah.
I got Andrew,
on a creepy tip.
Hey, baby, what size bra you wear? We're gonna send you a Sofa King bra.
I actually asked if she was wearing a shirt.
Yeah, so I got a couple shout outs. I'm only giving shout outs to people on Instagram now. So follow me on Instagram at Sofa King Brad. We got Phil Davey, DJ Casey Spins, Andrew Larson, a couple fans that hit us up this week. and are awesome because we like them. And there's some other people that I'm not mentioning.
Your fans sound they sound cool. They're like DJs over there or something.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. You know, what's
just the way you said it, I guess.
Yeah. Well, we talked about, we had a conversation right before we started this episode about our fans and who would win in a fight. And I'm sure I have the rougher fans out of the bunch.
Mine will poison you with ricin.
Yeah, mine will shoot you.
Not if they're dead from ricin.
Maybe. They have to drink it first.
Draw comic books about you and do yoga.
Yours will break up the fight between our fans.
Oh, hey, guys. Come on. Just
be friends.
Militia guys, just calm down, okay? Go try on some new fatigues or something, okay?
I posted a question about Cuba on Facebook and I got some good reactions. So I wanted to read a couple of listener reactions about Cuba and then we can kind of get things started. Jason Roskam, a friend of the show, said when I asked about Cuba, I find current events about Cuba to be fascinating. Obama is the first U.S. president in 80 years to visit Cuba, and the writer taking every opportunity to criticize him for it. It's probably just typical American politics, but why would you not want to try to establish a better working relationship with someone who is literally right in our backyard? And also, Cuban cigars are no better than some other good cigars from around the world. They were just hyped up because of that forbidden fruit aspects. Yeah, so he's throwing a
Jason Roskam
down.
The liberal.
So what wow. say you to the Cuban cigar scenario, Renee?
I still like me some Cuban cigars.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're telling what do you say to Roskam?
Yeah. Well, you know, there are a lot of great cigars out there. I like the Dominican cigars in particular, but the Cuban cigars, I get it. The whole forbidden fruit thing is definitely true.
Yeah, right.
But there's something about them, man, that they're just very smooth while being nice and strong.
Yeah, so fuck off, Jason. Yeah. That's what he said.
That's what I'm saying. Fuck off, Jason.
Fuck off, Jason. I've only ever smoked a handful of cigars in my life, so I really couldn't speak to it. I had someone like offer me a Cuban cigar, and I was like, nah. Like
really?
Yeah.
Why would you nah?
Because I don't smoke cigars. It's like,
come on.
I'm like, why would I rob you of your pleasure of smoking a Cuban cigar when I could go buy a fucking Swisher Sweet.
And
I would still fucking cough on it and have a miserable experience. So why don't you keep the Cuban cigar? Because you love it.
Because
I won't love it.
Lost points.
Why?
In my book.
You can't puff. You can't like puff give puff, with a Cuban. Like it's once you put your lips on it, it's yours. You
get to share. No.
There's no sharing cigars.
There's no sharing a cigar.
It's not like a joint.
Man. No. No, that's just yours.
I almost said something.
Make a cigar hookah? Can you make a cigar hookah?
I don't know.
Where you just plug the cigar
into I mean, I appreciated it and I'm sort of interested in smoking a Cuban cigar, but he was like so into it and he was like, no, it's my last one, but I want you. I was like, no, man.
Did he suck on the tip like when he was doing it? Like it made you not want to do it? Like just
psychically. You know, like I could see in his beady little eyes.
Was he Canadian?
Like in his mind that shit was all up on. I was like, no man, that's
well, I don't know whether it would change your mind, but you know they're rolled on the thighs of Cuban women.
I am so into the Cuban cigar. I just got fucking goosebumps, man. Look at this shit.
And then I mentioned it's the inner thigh.
Damn it, I just took a Viagra too, Renee. Fuck you.
No, fuck you.
I'm so hard right now.
It's just grandma's, bro.
Brent,
Cuban grandma.
Brent, get your foot away from my crotch.
That's not my foot. That's
I don't
not
care.
My foot.
Man.
It's a foot, but it ain't my foot.
Tiny sandwiches, ladies and gentlemen.
Couple other listener comments. I won't read through all of them, but Mike Money, who's a regular poster, he posted a link to some conspiracy theories about CIA and Castro that I looked at, so I wanted to thank him. Shane Harkin and Terry McGee both made some legit posts. And then Alejandro M. Reyna Jr. said nothing about Cuba, but he did say, I wanted to give you guys kudos for all the information and research you do for each episode. I don't know where you find the time. I've been researching a lot of your topics for years now, and I still hear things on your episodes that I haven't heard before. Keep up the great work. And now I'm going back to my Bible hut to masturbate. Peace.
Wow.
That's where you do it.
Yep. And do they do that in Texas? Is that a thing?
They call them whacking huts.
Whacking huts. Masturbating so those in the tool shed again.
Those were our listener.
Maybe I should have read Facebook. Like I'm not on Facebook right now. So I'm on the Instagram tip. So Facebook is not there. Maybe I should have read it and I'd have had something to study.
Maybe.
Yeah, I guess.
Maybe.
Brent told me not to study, though, so it's Brent's fault.
I don't remember that conversation.
I vaguely remember.
We all know my memory's bad.
Yeah. I think Brad's memory is like gone through editing. He remembered this week that you said, Brad, and you said, don't. And you said, study. And then he just fucking spliced it together. Well, he was like, thanks. I won't study.
Yeah.
You guys can lie to me as much as you want because I vaguely remember everything. Anything. Even my regular memories are vague.
You said that? No, I didn't say that. I remember you saying that.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
So we were
talking about Cuban cigars rolled on the thighs of women.
Yes.
Oh, let's get back inner on that topic. The inner thigh.
The inner thigh.
Yeah. So I...
Let the smart guys talk about that,
man. Okay. Sorry.
This was one of the topics that I kind of thought I knew some shit about. And when I really started looking into the history and what these people did and what was going on, I was like, damn, there's a whole lot of shit about the revolution and about what I did not know, the dictator's gone. Long live the dictator. Like, I mean, it's just like, fucking like
all revolution.
This crazy shit that went on. And I know the first time that, like, I remember when I was young, the first time I really kind of conceived of Cuba, like, because I grew like my entire life was Cuba is banned and no one goes there and there's a blockade. And, you know, and I remember watching The Godfather 2. And in The Godfather 2, he's in Cuba, like the day that the revolution is occurring. And I was watching and it was like him, like at these huge casinos on the beach and all this stuff. And I was like, shit, there was like a whole scene down there, you know? And when I started to look into it, like in Prohibition, like no one could drink, in the States. So people were just flocking to Cuba to drink rum. That's why Bacardi got put on the map. So it was just like the food and the music and the atmosphere. And it was just like everybody was feeling the Cuban love, like in the 1930s. and heading down there, and I really didn't know anything about that stuff.
Yeah, through the end of the 50s, there was a lot of American money down there. They were running girls, they were doing casinos, they were doing alcohol, absolutely. And then there's those Cuban cigars and the inner thigh.
Yes.
Yeah, but there's that. I mean, that's why they were going down.
Just keep bringing it back to that fucker.
Makes sense now. I didn't, you know, I had read that one of Castro's groups was called the Inner Thigh, and I wasn't, you know, I wasn't
like sure.
One of his hit squads.
Wow.
But I wasn't sure why.
I mean, the latest thing that comes to my mind about Cuba is Jay-Z and Beyonce going to Cuba and the president giving them a pass to go there. Like,
well, now you can get a pet. Like, I know, because there's been an embargo forever.
Yeah.
But what's the current situation? What changed?
Well, it's slowly changing. Up until now, if you were wanting to go to Cuba, you needed some kind of reason. Typically, it had to do with education or with something that you were going to exchange.
Right.
What they call person-to-person visits. So you had to have somebody that was basically sponsoring you when you go down. You had to go on a tour. You were watched the whole time.
Jesus.
That's opening up. That's opening up a lot. As a Cuban, for us, mostly it was going down illegally, typically through Merida in Mexico, because you could come in on a Mexican flight. They wouldn't stamp your passport. There was no actual official record you'd ever been on.
Oh, right.
So that's the kind of thing that's going to begin to open up.
So is there much of a, I mean, is it still a tourist destination for other countries? Like, do other people still tend to go there for those purposes? Or
absolutely.
No?
Yeah. I mean, I travel a fair amount. And one of the places that I constantly am seeing deals from is in France. The French love to go to Cuba.
Really?
And in Germany, it's big as well. So they're running tours all the time. I think at some point when the U.S. tourists come back, they're going to have to do something to kind of create more of an infrastructure. A lot of those hotels have been run down. A lot of those hotels
sure.
don't have,
yeah,
you know, the capacity.
Aren't gonna wanna go there.
No,
yeah.
They're not going to be, they don't want to go to a third world Cuba. They want to go back to the Cuba of the 1950s, you know.
Well, yeah, if you want to spend, casinos. If you want to go somewhere and spend money, I mean, you want it to be nice, you know. I mean,
I think it's going to be a bittersweet. I think you're going to have a trade of culture for Starbucks. Like, you're going to lose lot of the old Cuba and you're going to end up with like
I think if done right, though, you could do it. Like if they really wanted to keep that culture, I mean, look at, you know, Mardi Gras and stuff, you know what I mean? They've in Louisiana, they've kept that culture the same over years and years, even after floods, you know? So, I mean, they could do it in Cuba.
Well, a part of what I think people are looking for in Cuba is that Cuba of the 50s, those cars that have not been changed in 50 years.
Right.
They don't have any original parts, by the way. They keep them going with, you know, with baling wire and
whatever.
Beautiful. But some of them are in mint condition.
Yeah,
beautiful.
Absolutely. I want to go back, and my kids are old enough, they want to go back with me. I want to go back before the Starbucks, before the McDonald's, and before it looks like every other place.
My brother's actually going this month, I guess, because that's his goal, is like go before that happens.
Yeah, one more time. Absolutely.
And there's definitely a push for that.
So you guys think that it's going to turn into McDonald's and Starbucks and the Ritz-Carlton.
The vision that I see for it is very similar to Hawaii. I have a feeling that there's going to be a lot of really nice resorts that are as Cuban as a Hawaiian hotel is Hawaiian.
Yeah.
I mean, you walk into a Hawaiian hotel and you just, the Hawaiian flowers are everywhere and the music's playing and everybody's wearing.
But it's almost fake.
Though. It is.
It's almost fake.
It's kind of fake, but it's still present. It's very much in the DNA of the place.
Yeah.
And a really nice hotel does it very well. Mm-hmm. Like if you go to the Hilton Hawaiian Village, you don't feel like it's fake or that it's forced. You're having this genuine sort of Hawaiian experience.
Yeah. It's like when you go down to Compton, you still get that black.
Yeah, you still get the Compton experience.
It's never changed.
I think it's Hilton that just signed a deal to open a number of new hotels
down there.
But apparently, they want to be family friendly, so I think they're going to be rolling cigars in the lobby, but only on the outside.
And it's dudes.
It's
I have a Cuban Cigar Connect too. Now I really want some Cuban cigars. Like, I don't smoke, and I'm into it. Like full on, like this is happening. Like there's going to be pictures of me on Instagram with Cubans for sure.
One of the most interesting things I came across was the fact that like doctors are taxi drivers and the electrical engineers own barber shops and stuff because of the whole employee of the state. Like, you know, a nurse works 8 hours and makes less than $2. A doctor makes $40 a month and a taxi driver makes $60 a day. I wonder what happens economically and in the job thing with when this flips and the infusion of income comes in with tourists. Do doctors still stay taxi drivers because they're still going to make a ton of money, or does it somehow are other people going to fill those that trade because you're going to need a lot of taxis, and then everybody starts regular people from remedial jobs start to become taxi drivers? Do doctors step back up?
I don't think so. I mean, is there going to be an influx and hurt people? Like when you start going over there, like
probably.
I mean, it depends.
Well, there's still a healthcare system.
Depends on the quality of the room.
More muggings are going to happen. Like, so they're going to need more.
Well, right now you have the same problem like that with universal healthcare. Like doctors come to the States. All the good doctors leave to make money.
Yeah.
There they just become taxi drivers.
Yeah, but they still don't get paid being a doctor. You know what I mean? Like it's still going to be the same effect just because the state's making more money.
I don't know though. The whole society is going to change. It's going to flip.
I think it will change. I think money is going to change things.
Money always changes.
And Cuba's already sort of experimented a little bit with free market capitalist models. They've allowed families to start small bed and breakfasts in their own homes or restaurants. That's really a very common thing in Havana now.
With the collapse of they made it off like you know, basically the USSR supported them.
Right.
And then when the fall of the Soviet Union happened, they didn't have that subsidization of like gifting.
No, absolutely.
Them.
I mean, Cuban economy just bottomed out.
Yeah.
They have
ration cards.
Exactly.
Like literally they have to go like, here's my soap, here's my loaf of bread. And I guess that's getting worse and worse. And then finally they realized like I watched a video on a guy went to Cuba and he's like really excited. Like, oh, they're going to have cool street food. Like, what do they have? Ham sandwiches everywhere. It was like just every little place.
Right.
Yeah. He found like, he was in Havana.
Ham
he's like,
sandwiches.
It's just like state run restaurants and state run food facilities where you walk in and there's just like three people waiting around for the food ration to show up. And even when it did show up, you're getting like a bread roll with some ham. It was just ham sandwiches everywhere.
So horrible.
But to try to circumvent that, they realized they started to hand out private licenses for things like barber shops or taxi drivers or restaurants. And then it becomes competitive and you have to sell good food if you want to stay open because now it's on you. And they do have some great stuff that's come of that. So I think that's just going to take off, you know?
I think so.
No one's going to say no to money, including the government. They'll figure out taxation and whatnot.
They've said no for a very long time.
Yeah, but because they didn't have a lot of choice. I mean, they had import-export with China and stuff, but now that the U.S. is there, they actually like Americans. They fantasize that American culture thing. They want that, but they probably, like, they actually have an internet. Did you guys see that?
Yeah, exactly. But they've had very, but they've had very limited access. And that's one of the things.
It's kind of like China.
It is like China.
How they limit their people.
They have a 5% internet, actual internet penetration, but they created their own, I should say, intranet. Like they wired, like.
Yeah, it's their own.
They run like LAN cables across apartment complexes, and they have created an intranet of like 10,000 computers. Someone flies like from Florida and they sneak in a terabyte hard drive. I found this guy is called like Danny Packett. It's like Danny Paquete, and he's like the guy. Instead of dealing drugs, he deals media. So he has, it's super cool. So they're like,
you would be into that.
Yeah, I watched a Vice guide where this guy shows up and he's like, it's super sketchy. And he's like, this is going to be like this super scary guy with neck tattoos. And he's in sitting in the lobby waiting, and some 26-year-old kid in board shorts with no shirt came out and said, hey, come in the room. There's like two computers. One of them streaming like Spanish soap operas through a hidden satellite in a water tank on the roof. And the other part was downloading. You pay $2 and they'll let you download as much as you want on your 2 gig flash drive and take off. And every week they update it. So when a movie comes out here on Friday, they have it on Monday. No, they have like what looks like a Netflix,
That's horrible, though. Like you have to go to this hotel room to download your content.
They didn't have cell phones till 2008. Like they have nothing, you know, but they do have the highest literacy rate.
I think 99.8%. We could really make some money here.
Sneak stuff. It's too late. You're late to the game.
I don't think so. I think we can come up with
They have an Android and iPhone app market built into their intranet. And I mean, it looks just like our stuff.
It's fake.
Yeah.
It's not a real internet. Like they said, like you'd be on it and you would not really realize. Like they have like,
nothing on it.
No, we just, I'm just saying,
my suggestion is we need to fucking get in touch with Danny Packett and start giving him episodes of Sof King Podcast.
That's there what you I'm go. Talking about. Yeah, Sofa Paquete.
We do know a Cuban. So, Renee, your homework this week is to get in touch with Danny Packett.
There you go.
Do you have dual citizenship, or do you have citizenship at all? Or what's your journey like when you go?
Yeah. Well, the thing is this. So I was born in Cuba, came over when I was 10 years old, mid-60s. Okay. So if you're a natural born Cuban, you never lose your Cuban citizenship in general. So if I go in up until now, if I went in legally, I'd have to enter essentially as a Cuban.
Because they
haven't recognized
you just live in
the
United States.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
But that's, I think, one thing that's going to change. And I'm actually been thinking about applying for a Cuban passport again and reestablishing formally my dual citizenship. I still have family there. I'd like to be able to travel there.
Yeah.
I think as things, you know, open up, it'll be more and more, it'll be easier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
If you showed up as a Cuban, could you potentially get fucked? And they'd be like, nope, you're not going anywhere, Cuban.
Well, potentially that is an issue. And that's why, one of the reasons why I haven't traveled back is because my family has been terrified that's exactly what would happen.
Yeah. You get stuck there.
Yeah, exactly. But I think that's going to be less and less of an issue, and it'll be easier and easier to travel back and forth.
I mean, I don't understand the embargo at all anymore. Like, I understand why it happened. I understand the history of it, et cetera, but I just don't get why it's still a fucking thing.
Well, you know what? I'll tell you why it's a fucking thing, because the fucking Cubans in Miami keep it a fucking thing.
I'm serious.
I mean, look, when I would travel to Miami to visit my parents, my dad would always ask me the same thing. Please don't talk politics to other Cubans, okay? Because the whole thing is that maintaining the embargo was their way of maintaining this illusion that one day they were going to go back and get all the shit that was taken from them, given back to them. It's ridiculous. Yeah, the embargo, I don't know that the embargo ever worked, but it certainly hasn't worked in the last 40 years.
Right.
It's made it easier for Cuba to be able to isolate itself, keep its people, you know, from seeing what's going on in the rest of the world, because there was this giant American specter that was holding a big stick over their head.
I don't think there's an example of an embargo working like they did it to what Iran or and they hope that you cut them off from the outside and they crumble, but everyone finds a way.
No,
it hasn't happened. And the opposite is you go attack and engage and blow them up, and you leave a vacuum of government, and then ISIS or someone fills in the thing. So it's like the best thing to do is honestly probably what Obama's trying to do is just engage and have the conversation.
Open it up.
Open it up and start doing business and set some rules as far as how business goes.
No, exactly. Look, Germany. If you look at East Germany, what brought down the government and the way of life in East Germany? It wasn't an embargo. It was opening things up.
Yeah, once those people MTV and blue jeans.
Hey, wait a minute. What's going on in the rest of the world?
Exactly.
This looks great. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's kind of on the downside.
That's the shitty part of the embargo.
I understand that less than the embargo, actually. The whole Hasselhoff effect.
Well, I understand that.
Well, Germans like shitty music, and that's just what happened. That's
I understand that he
byproduct.
Like took off his shirt and flexed, and that's what brought the wall down. The Hoff's pec muscles brought the
seven
wall down.
Seven trumpets sounded.
So, I mean, and again, this, the one of, I mean, I think it's impossible to talk about Cuba without getting into the idea of the revolution, because I think, I mean, I thought I knew what went down in the revolution. And when I researched it over the last week and a half, I was like, fuck, I didn't know anything about what actually went down there, because it was pretty fucking crazy, right?
Yeah.
So in 1933, General Fulgencio Batista, am I butchering his
name? Just be confident. You always pull names off beautifully. Yeah, just so you know.
That's pretty good.
For a black guy, you can talk. Go.
Okay.
It was perfect Ebonics.
I mean, I understood it perfectly. Right, okay. Brent didn't understand at all.
So
you didn't speak tree spoke.
Tree spoke?
Yeah, tree spoke. That's what it's called. Tree spoke.
So
I come. I'm the hippie and Dave's the vegan. Like, I don't understand how that happens.
How, I don't
what
know.
Happens?
Because I have a bus. I mean, labeled the hippie somehow. I don't understand. Because I wanted to move to Oregon at one point. Brad won't let it go. I'm a hippie.
Well, I still want to move to Oregon.
You have a Volkswagen bus.
You got the beard and the bus.
And you're wearing a lumberjack shirt.
Yeah, you are wearing a lumberjack shirt.
Yeah, you carry around logs of wood randomly.
In my pants.
All day.
In my pants.
Every day. Yeah.
So, I'm like the hood version of you.
Yeah.
Both carry around logs of wood.
So General Batista took over Cuba in 1933 as part of something called the Revolt of Sergeants. So the government that was there before, I'm assuming, got overtaken during this revolt. And then through various efforts over the years, he finally became president in 1940. And then in 1952, he was losing the election to become president. So he staged a military coup and just took over the country and then still kind of sat on it. And
who's this?
This is a guy named General Batista, and he was before the revolution. Yeah. He was what the revolution was revolutioning against.
About, yeah.
So from what I read, he was in bed with the wealthiest landowners in Cuba, the sugar plantations. He was responsible for widening the wealth gap and increasing Cuban poverty, because the upper class was making all the money and the lower class wasn't. From what I read, he was in bed with the American mafia, and he ran prostitution, drugs, and gambling out of Havana and all the major cities with and for the mob.
Mm-hmm. I would do that.
He was in bed with U.S. corporations and awarded them huge contracts all over Cuba, and people didn't like that either. He suspended a lot of civil and political liberties for the people, and he carried out wide-scale torture and public executions. I read a very wide range that said that he either killed
crossing out stuff on
between 1,000 people or 2,000 or 20,000 people.
Yep, that one too.
Yep,
there goes.
In his day. So this is who
led the
country,
just
right?
That
so
page.
Things I missed about General Batista.
Go ahead. I think you did a great rundown. I mean, that's exactly right. And the interesting thing is that when Fidel starts revolting against Batista, at first he failed in the mid-50s, gets exiled to Mexico, reforms in Mexico, comes back in the late 50s.
Oh, I didn't know about, because I read about him sort of forming up in Mexico City, but I didn't know he had failed.
It was like him and a small crew got, he didn't die.
Well, you call him,
got in prison.
You call him Fidel, exactly. I call him Fiddle.
Fiddle.
Castro.
Fiddle Castro, exactly. Yeah, he was an attorney, and he led this movement in Cuba against Batista. He gets thrown out of the country. He reforms in Mexico and comes back with people like Che Guevara and forms that second front.
How fucking crazy is that you are planning to take over a country? You know what I mean? You're an attorney. Yeah.
I think first round he had like 160 guys.
Well, that's the other crazy part of this. Yeah, that it's a very small group of people to take over.
They tried to attack.
It's not a whole lot of them. Like that. Yeah. That's fucking ballsy.
But they attacked where the munitions were or something strategic. Yeah. Well, and then they didn't make it. Yeah. Then he got imprisoned. And then he reformed, regrouped, came back with 89 guys, I think it was. And then still got his butt kicked or something and fell back into like the jungle or the...
Basically up into the mountains in the central of the country.
Yeah.
And so that, like, the details on that are pretty crazy because he organizes a thing called M26-7 or the 26th of July movement. And when he's in Mexico City, that's where he meets up with Che Guevara, and who, from what I read, was largely responsible for a lot of the tactics involved in what happened during the revolution.
Yeah.
Were they Mexican mafia or something? Or
he was Argentinian. And he was a physician and an author and a motorcycle driver and
crazy about this whole thing is these guys were like an attorney and an author.
Yeah.
Like, and they're planning to take over a country.
And so Che was upset at what was happening all through South America because he was seeing poverty spread. He was seeing American corporations take everything over. He was seeing the CIA oust leaders. He was seeing all this negative effect of what America was doing to sort of second world and third world countries. And he was very upset about it. And then when he met Fidel, he was like, oh, fuck it. They're doing that in Cuba too. And kind of signed on. So they all got on a ship called the Grandma.
I saw that.
Is that actually Grandma? Because there's no D. Grandma,
which is actually the grandma. Name of the official newspaper and news service of Cuba.
I saw that. Yeah.
They need to change that stat. ASAP. So, like, before the Americans come, change that shit.
So yeah. This is
just a word of advice.
They change it to mommy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mama.
They're all
mama.
Is that better?
Yeah. Although it's not. Cuba, so it's going to be more like I'm mummy.
Yeah.
And then we're back to the thighs.
I got a hard on again. Damn it.
It always comes back to the thighs.
It really does. I'm just saying, it really does.
So this is in December of 1956. 82 rebels that have met up in Mexico City end up traveling to Cuba, and it doesn't fucking go well. The ship gets attacked by the Cuban Air Force. The group gets split up and lost on shore with no supplies. A peasant guide sabotages them and kills a bunch of them. And by the time they finally meet
a
up,
peasant
a peasant guide
just destroys them.
That sounds like a kung fu.
You're trying to go right past that. I'm like, no. This one fucking bum destroys them.
Peasant guide.
Yeah. Wow.
Killed a bunch of them.
I'd like to think if they make a movie, it's portrayed by Jackie Chan.
Yeah, I hope so.
Asian. That's what I said right from the beginning. Bam.
So of the 82 that got on the grandma.
Grandma.
Yeah. 12.
The I-mami.
That's right. On the I-mami. 12 make it to the Sierra Maestra Mountains where they were supposed to get together.
Whoa. 89. Only 12 made it?
12 made it.
What'd they
and
do?
Then once they
fuck
get
each other
there.
To death?
Once they get there, well, no, they got attacked by the fucking Cuban Air Force and
the
peasant.
The bum. Yeah, the bum.
The one guy.
The fucking one guy took it. These guys sucked, but for the record.
Yeah, that's true.
Fidel Castro was a horrible army leader. Jesus Christ.
Never trust a peasant. No. This is what we're learning.
Cuban monk kung fu.
And once they get to the mountains, they have to fight the Cuban army. Che got shot in the neck and in the chest. And I mean, it was a fucking rough start. So they end up with a handful of them in the mountains, which makes and this is in 1956. And it makes it all the more impressive that in just 3 fucking years, the 12 stragglers who make it to the mountain end up somehow overturning the government.
I'm upset about this.
Yeah. There was a lot of public support though. Like as they were cruising through villages, I think they probably picked up guys.
Yeah.
They did.
No, that's definitely true.
And that was a part of the contribution to Che. You know, is that he got people thinking that things could be different, that the corruption could be
che
different.
A Cuban name?
No. It's actually a nickname for Ernesto, which was his real name.
Yeah, because I know Ernesto. A white dude named Che. Like that's weird. Yeah. That's weird. That's a weird, a different name.
Yeah. Do you know any guys named Fiddle?
Just only Fiddle one. Castro. That's the only guy I know. That's it. And so apparently he was fucking boss with 12 dudes.
That's right. So, yeah. So then they end up defeating General Batista in the Battle of Santa Clara, which is led by Che.
I'm upset at Batista right now.
And this is January 1st, 1959. And again, that was upset. What was portrayed in Godfather 2. That was when that was my first introduction.
New Year's
because
Day.
Michael Corleone is down there. They're celebrating on New Year's Eve.
So and Dave's they research get, was Godfather 2.
He gets run out, like his guards get him out. Because,
I think we talked about this. I've never seen any of the Godfathers.
Oh, you got to watch that.
I can't do it now. I've lived my life without watching any Star Wars, and I've lived my life without watching any Godfathers, and I'm going to continue to do so.
I can respect that.
Thank you.
I can respect
appreciate
that.
It.
You're losing out on a cultural gem, but I fully respect your decision.
I don't think so. I mean,
because I made a vow. I've taken very few vows in my life,
okay.
But I vowed to all that I hold sacred when I was 17. Because I was really pissed off at how much media attention he was getting for some reason, that I would never
you
in my
blow
life
George Lucas.
Yes. No, I would never in my life watch a Woody Allen movie.
Okay. Mm. I've watched a Woody Allen movie.
And I've never seen a Woody Allen movie. I'm like not I don't know. Like people
no
tell
Brent,
me I'm missing
no Brent,
out on a lot.
No Brent, we're not clipping.
I write a note to not interrupt the podcast.
I'm just letting you know. We're not clipping. We're good.
We're just
see,
really...
And other podcasts out there, if you're listening, you don't need a fucking mixer. We don't touch volumes during the fucking show.
Touch volumes.
I just want to... Yes.
Oh, wait. That's not a volume.
Yes.
That's hobbing a knob, not touching a
knob. Yeah. So I just want to get that out there because I'm very frustrated about the mixer and podcast deal.
I just saw lots of flashing lights, and I feel like we're really loud.
No,
they're
all green, buddy. They're all green.
They're on your side. I need a mirror once again.
All green.
Yeah, you do.
All green, like the tobacco that's going into the rolled thighs of women. All green.
It's only green the first time.
That's what I'm talking
right,
about.
Right, right.
It's fine. Damn it.
That's the revolution. Are there any key points to the revolution that I sped past that we definitely want to look at? Like, what do you?
I don't know if you missed anything.
Good history.
I think you did good.
Yeah,
I think you did awesome.
Brad doesn't know anything about it, though. Right. Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, Cuba.
I would like to point as soon as
actually you called it Cuba.
Cuba.
Cuba. We pronounce it wrong. You sons of bitches out there! It's Cuba.
Because
so,
once that
I asked him if you look like Cuba Gooding Jr. That's what
exactly. We get confused all the time.
Yeah,
same thing.
Yeah. He has to hold himself back from saying, "Show me the money."
He just has
I thought
a shirt.
You were gonna. Yeah, I thought you were gonna show up in like a 1940s dive suit or something like.
What?
That'd have been awesome. I don't know. What's I'm that confused. Movie?
Okay.
I got it.
So Castro takes power on January 1st, 1959, and immediately this doesn't sit well with the United States.
No.
Like immediately.
Why? Because they're mad because 12 dudes just took over a country?
Well, they're mad because General Batista was kind of their stooge.
Oh, he was their in. Huh?
He was letting them buy up properties and whatnot too. Yeah.
Well, exactly. He immediately took all U.S. properties and made them national.
Right.
So they lost everything.
That's legit. Like he should have done that.
You want to hear a funny fact that he did?
What?
He immediately ordered the destruction of any Monopoly board games. That's the truth. I swear to God.
You're fucking with me right now.
Some kind of psychological thing of like
empowerment. Hold on. This is on hashtag. You guys move out of this, okay? Yeah. This is me and Brent. You're all fucking with me right now.
I swear I'm not making that up.
They had Monopoly there?
Yeah. Before.
I'm fucking moving.
Yeah.
Like,
no, but it's probably psychological, right? It's like, don't even have any sense of like capitalist empowerment.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Private ownership.
Exactly. Ownership.
Exactly.
Dave's a fucking Cuban Nazi.
You can't even pretend you own something. That's how crazy
although,
that started.
You can't pretend you own a home.
It could have gone both ways because Castro goes to the UN shortly after this goes down and says basically that
fuck
they're going to take the, well, yeah, fuck you. But before he says fuck you, he says, to the United States, you want to be our partners, you want to help us out, you want to reestablish. We say, fuck you.
Right.
Before he says it, right? It could have gone either way. He went to the Soviet Union. Why? Because they were willing.
Yeah.
Right.
Because they were willing.
Right.
So, I mean, I think if Castro was a Marxist, he was more like a Harpo Marxist. It was really Che that was the Marxist, right? He was the one that, but it, so.
They just didn't think he was going to let Russians put 150 nukes on the island.
Exactly.
That motherfucker is ballsy. Yeah, like that guy, fucking 12 dudes, like picking up guys on the way, take over a country, go to the UN, tell the Americans what you're going to fucking do.
So
they tell you to fuck off. You accept the US fucking USSR offer and fucking move along.
Like, my question here is, so the 12 guys pick up a bunch of people on their way in to build the revolution. So my question is,
and they were probably 12-year-olds too, because it sounds like Batista was.
How would you say "dude passerby" in Spanish?
Dude passerby.
I'm surprised you didn't know that, Dave.
Well, there goes your shout out, dude passerby, on Twitter. There you go.
I'm pretty sure it's El Hombre Arriba.
I call him fucking dick face motherfucker, but you know, that's what's up.
So anyway, so shortly after all this, President Eisenhower meets with the National Security Council, and they want to basically replace the Castro regime with some shit they can control.
Right.
And he dedicates $13.1 million, which at the prorated for today is the equivalent of $105 million to overthrowing Castro via supply drops, guerrilla attacks.
Like, doesn't seem like a whole lot.
Funding people in Cuba to overturn Castro, basically.
Yeah, poisoning his cigars.
Yeah, and this is where you get into a lot of the conspiracy theories that I know we'll get to with ideas of how the CIA was trying to kill Castro and bring him down and all this different stuff. But this is part of, Eisenhower officially dedicated money and said, we have to bring this motherfucker down. And this is what the government started to do. And this really leads to...
It's funny that the Americans were using Cuba and buying up their shit, and now all of a sudden they're an enemy.
Right.
Like...
Right.
Just because they're going against what they want to keep their own country.
And then they're especially the enemy because at the time we have commie fever. And as soon as they align with the Soviets, it's like they're instantly the enemy. Right. And again,
and we're pretty much communist now.
So right. But I mean, the fact of the Cold War was we were picking battles between countries that the Soviets were aligned with because we didn't want to go to war with the Soviets.
Yeah, we were perfectly happy to support dictators
all over Latin the fucking America. Place.
But
as soon as they became communist dictators, then we had a problem because we could stick a stick in Cuba's eye and not fucking get nuked, but I'm not going to go poke the Soviet bear. I can go fuck with Vietnam and not get nuked, but I can't go.
Who was the leader of the USSR at the time? Was it Gorbachev?
Khrushchev.
Khrushchev. Yeah.
Do you guys ever notice that the Cuban islands look like an anteater?
I hadn't noticed.
No,
it does. Check it out. It's pretty interesting. I just saw that right now.
Couple more key things that we should talk about historically.
Must be the Jameson.
One of them is the Bay of Pigs, which I really didn't know that much about, which was really fucking crazy, right? Did you guys know much about the Bay of Pigs?
Never heard of it.
The Kennedy attempted bombing thing?
Well, actually, he pulls back air support, which is part of the reason why the Cubans that came over got clobbered.
Though they painted three planes like Cuban planes, sent them over, did some bombing.
Yeah, they did some bombing.
Only hit a couple planes,
right?
And then they got so much heat for it because everyone knew it was them. When they did the Bay of Pigs, he pulled out air support and then fucked the rest of everything else.
Yeah, and the guys who landed were fucked over.
So the Bay of Pigs is in April of 1961, and it's an invasion of Cuba, basically. And the CIA trained 1,400 Cubans who had fled the country. They didn't send Americans in. They sent Cubans in to try to sort of retake Cuba, right? And they went to the Bay of Pigs. And again, the air support fell through that they were promised. And very quickly, they ended up getting their asses kicked. They land on the beach. There's a leader named Jose Ramon Fernandez, who's in charge of the Cuban side. But then Castro shows up and takes over, and they just get their ass kicked. And within 24 hours, they lose.
And that's sort of the end of the resistance on the island side. because they ended up capturing their weapons. They ended up breaking up their organization. So all the people that were working still on the island for change, that was the end.
So that was how he consolidated his power.
Why was Kennedy so against Cuba? Like, what was his thing was to get rid of the New World Order and stop the one world government.
Well, this was already the Bay of Pigs was already going because Cold of War. Eisenhower's plans, and then Kennedy became president
and he inherited it.
Inherited the hate for Cubans.
Well, he inherited the closer ties with the Soviet Union. So I think that was really what was fueling it. They saw Cuba as a place where the Soviets could get a foothold 90 miles from the,
from Florida.
Border.
Yeah,
exactly.
90 miles
from Key West.
So because Cuba was involved with Russia, that was the big take out Cuba.
Yeah, like, they just parked 150 nukes in our backyard.
Listen, we won World War II. Like, how do we not take over Cuba?
We didn't just win, though.
Well, I'm just saying, like, how do we not take over Cuba? The U.S. is a world power. How do we not take over Cuba?
We don't take over.
I don't understand.
Well, I think the thing there is to realize the Soviet Union again. So what Cuba stood for was the possibility of worldwide nuclear warfare between the Soviet Union and the U.S.
Get it close to the U.S.
And people don't realize they got very close to it, actually.
Yes.
With the Cuban embargo, the missile embargo.
Okay.
It was a game of nuclear chicken.
Yeah.
Okay. And the U.S. won.
So it was nuclear chess, basically. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we set up a blockade, too, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And the Soviet Union, until the last minute, wasn't ready to back down. They backed down only at the last minute.
Yeah. And the blockade actually is not allowed. It was supposed to be set up a quarantine because blockades are not allowed or something. Yeah.
Right.
Really? Not allowed.
Yeah. And Korea wasn't a war. It was a police action.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's
they used the word.
And I mean, another thing is so the missile crisis. Started in 62 when a U-2 spy plane photographed Soviet SS-4 medium-range ballistic missiles being assembled in Cuba for, to be able to launch.
So
and the spy planes took the picture and said, holy fucking shit. And then on October, that was on the 14th, on the 22nd, which kind of trips me out, they saw it on the 14th and Kennedy wasn't told about it till the 22nd. Like, that seems like a bit of a lag.
Who's in the late? He always said, don't bother me.
Internet was a little slow back then, okay? I don't understand how we told them to fuck off, though. Yeah. Like, how do we told them to fuck off?
Yeah.
Like, we said, Cuba, fuck off. And then they were like,
Kennedy did. So it was Cuba, fuck off.
Cuba.
Yeah.
You know, don't.
We do not bother me. They are hard. But Cuba, fuck off.
Do not bother me till October 28th.
I'm with Maryland.
Unless it's a nuclear bomb and then hit me on the 22nd. That was pretty much his standing order.
Yeah. So we tell them to fuck off. And now we're worried about a fucking nuclear war because of Russia.
So on the 24th, the big standoff happens with the fleets in the ocean. Mm-hmm. The big sort of key moment that occurs. And one thing that I discovered when I was researching, and some people know this, but I don't know how many people do. There was actually a doctor from Oxford, and he led a team of actually his students that were like at the embargo line. Apparently what happened was he trained his team and gave them costumes and called them the X-Men.
His name, you're making that.
Did one of them have a wheelchair?
That was the doctor from Oxford, Dr. Charles Xavier. And they actually, there's a whole documentary on it called X-Men First Class. It's a really well done documentary, but it shows them in Cuba during the missile crisis, and it shows how the X-Men averted the missile crisis.
Did they have a guy named Wolverine?
No, that's ridiculous. He told him to fuck off. It's in the documentary. They go to try to recruit him, and he tells him to fuck off. It was a documentary done by Fox Studios, and it didn't get released until 2011. So a lot of people didn't know.
I've never heard of this.
That was a key, but X-Men First Class. You should check it out. It's a fucking crazy documentary.
The Cuban missile crisis.
Yeah.
Yep. Really?
Yep.
It's fucking ridiculous.
But so the Cuban Missile Crisis, it finally gets resolved. Like, everybody's wanting war. Kennedy actually aims for negotiation, thank fucking God, and tries to hold off and hold off.
I want war and Cuban cigars.
Everybody keeps, I want the thighs of Cuban women.
Cuban women in my mouth.
Yeah.
So tasty. Yeah. And we will surface the moon.
Yeah. Well, apparently, you know, he bought like several years' supply worth of cigars right before he signed the executive order.
Oh, I'm not surprised. Yeah. Just like his father bought up all the granaries.
Yeah. He
apparently liked the little cigars that came off of little thighs.
Right.
Yeah.
Whoa. Yeah. You're calling Kennedy a child molester? This is ridiculous.
No, you did.
I believe you.
That's right. So they end up striking a deal, and they basically tell the Khrushchev and the Russians publicly, if you get rid of the missiles and back off, we will not invade Cuba because we were about to.
Right.
And Khrushchev says, you also have to pull all of your nukes out of Turkey, which is really close to them. Yeah. And Kennedy says, nope, we're not going to do it. Like, gets on TV, we will not pull our nukes from Turkey. And then, like, immediately thereafter, secretly pulled all the nukes from Turkey because that was part of the deal.
Yeah, and that's a sexual position, too, nukes from Turkey.
The other big thing that people don't realize is, like, there's the whole, it could really happen, but most of it had to do with saving face and not looking like either was backing down.
Yeah, you don't want to look like a pussy.
Right. Publicly. Right. So they were in
negotiations. You are a world power, not a pussy.
They were in negotiations behind the scenes saying like, okay, I'll pull the nukes. You pull the nukes. Let's pull the nukes. Yeah. Let's get out of this. How can we get out of this?
In reality,
but everyone's watching. So, and that's actually when they established that the red line to Moscow.
Yeah.
Right. Because of that.
Now let's put Putin in place at this time. You think that shit would have happened?
I think Putin's a really nice, respectful man. Yeah.
No, I think the same thing happens. Putin doesn't want a fucking nuclear war either.
I don't
either.
Think so. I disagree.
You know, no, I don't think he wants a nuclear,
wants a nuclear war.
I think he fucks all the Cuban women and then fucking has a nuclear war.
And
afterwards.
Then swims with the dolphins. That's off the coast of Havana.
Dolphins on the coast of Cuba. He swims on a dolphin all the way with a fucking nuclear warhead on his back all the way to Florida.
Just like
and blows up Florida.
So
Mixed Feelings podcast doesn't exist.
At the end of this, we end up with Castro completely in power and tied to the Soviet Union and the whole thing. And then, so what is Castro's regime like? Like beautiful. How is it compared to the general? Like how does he run the country?
Well, here's the thing. So
everybody has their hair parted. Beautiful.
I think to the people living there, there might not have been so many differences. In the sense that all the people who didn't have shit before Castro still didn't have shit after Castro.
Right.
I mean, they talk about,
changed.
You know, in that sense, probably not a lot changed. But one thing did change is because the Soviet Union, it wasn't a free ride. One thing that changed is that the Cubans inherited their own Vietnam, Angola. Okay. So they had to fight for the Soviet Union. We talk about the 50,000, 55,000 American lives that were lost in Vietnam. We have a similar number being lost in Angola of Cuban troops from an island that has 1/30th the population of the United States.
That's a fucking hit.
So, I mean, it wasn't a free ride. So in that respect, nothing changed. Education, interestingly, and health care were given to everyone before Batista and are still there. So
yeah,
that's
one thing I was curious about.
Interesting dichotomy.
I keep reading that like the literacy rates are super high in Cuba. Like, is the education that good down there? Like, why is that so high?
No internet. You read books.
That's right. That's right. The education and healthcare have actually been excellent for a long time. There does seem to be a basic commitment to those kinds of services.
Sure.
But other than that, you're going to be eating ham sandwiches 365 days a year because that's all there
is. That's horrible.
Eat.
There's also the effect of like, when you don't have cable and you have 13 channels, you'll watch Matlock. Like, and you have
the Matlock factor.
1,000 channels and you will sit
the
there
Matlock
and flip. You will flip through channels. So like if you're sitting there and all there is are these books that keep your cousin gave you the book, who read the book and you read all the books. Yeah, you're going to have a high literacy. You have to read. That's nothing. There's nothing else to do.
Yeah, there is no channels.
You pass the time. That's your entertainment. And there's no monopoly. So what are you going to do?
I don't read. So
Candyland was okay. It was actually the national game board
there
game.
There you go.
They have Candyland competitions.
And I read, and I don't know, like I read a lot of stuff about his run in Cuba, a lot of stuff about, you know, firing squads for his political enemies and the old regime. I don't know if that was just done immediately after the revolution or if that was something that was kept going for years later. Was he that kind of a dictator? Like, were there firing squads and disappearances in the middle of the night through all this whole time? Or
yeah, there were a lot of disappearances and a lot of people that lost their lives. It was called being put on page 8, because what would happen is the following morning after executions on page 8, they would list the people that were killed to further the effect
on the newspaper,
of it, right? Yeah. And if you go to the Mariel boat lift in the 70s, a part of the issue there was that they wanted to get rid of all these people they had put in prison and also people that they had in mental hospitals and other. And so they basically put them in with the legitimate people that were leaving the island. Wow. That hadn't done anything. As a way of getting rid of that burden of having to house all those people, warehouse
right.
all those people.
No, I had read that at some point he gave a pass to a bunch of people to basically get opposition out of his country. Like, yeah. Now's your fucking chance to leave. Yeah. You can leave right now, or you're going to be on page right. 8 in a couple of months. You make the fucking call. And a lot of people got the fuck out.
It slowed down the resistance. I mean, I think there's a very active resistance now, in the sense that there are groups of people that are younger people that were born under the Castro regime that want to see a change. Maybe some of those people that are downloading, you know, in those hotel rooms,
it's
getting
hip-hop.
Their down. Yeah.
Hip-hop. Did it.
But at the time, he really got rid of the resistance.
Yeah. And that from what I read, that happened in September of 63, was like one of the biggest pushes where he let people like all get the fuck out.
Yeah, that's where hip hop was really at its peak in September of 63.
Yeah, that's right. It was.
And, you know, people were rebellious and had to get out.
And I read a bunch of stats that don't match up, because stats never do. But there's a group called the Cuba Archive, and it talks about it says that in the entire run of Castro's government, there's been about 3,600 confirmed firing squads, 1,200 confirmed disappearances, et cetera. And the dead and missing, according to them, comes to 10,500. This is
and his thing. Army at this time is still 12 strong.
That's right. This is a thing. But he also now has a handful of Cuban peasants on his side.
Oh, yes,
who have
yes.
Cuban
and we all know.
Arts. Yeah,
we all know from the opposition peasants
you can't
that they
stop
are
them.
Strong. You can't stop them. The peasants.
A professor from University of Hawaii named R.J. Rummel says that his numbers are that Castro regime killed about 73,000 people between when he took over in 1987. And then I read stuff from Genocide Watch that said that 8,000 have been confirmed killed by his regime.
Regime?
His Regina.
Damn.
Did you know a girl named Regina? Shit.
But they claimed that 78,000 Balseros or rafters were killed trying to escape the regime.
I would think more people died trying to cross the Florida Straits than in a firing squad.
So like somewhere between 10,000, 8,000, and 73,000, according to these different groups.
10,000, 8,000, and 73,000.
Those are the three numbers I found.
That's pretty close.
Yeah.
I agree. I read that if you got Boardwalk and Park Place, you were put to firing squad.
That's right.
He didn't
do not pass go.
Do not collect $200.
Yeah. Sometimes if you got them, he would give you a stern look, but if you put a hotel on either one,
ooh, right.
Yeah. If you own a railroad, Rainbow Railroad,
do not pass go.
Yeah, you're done.
I also read that he would jail poets, homosexuals, and rockeros, which were rock and roll lovers.
Yep. I would too.
I would jail them too.
Just call me Fidastro.
Motherfuckers.
Fidastro. That's me.
I even read that Che Guevara's own grandson fled Cuba because he was a rock musician. So he had to get out of there because the police kept harassing him.
Fiddle's grandson?
Che's grandson.
Oh, Che's grandson.
And that even just as a fuck you to America, they were like actively letting groups like the Viet Cong and the Black Panthers and groups that were anti-American establishment coming to Cuba to train. To learn how to militarize, to do all this shit. They were like, come on down, boys. We got cigars, rum, and pies.
I wonder how you get the KKK and the Black Panthers together. I wonder how that went down.
Different sides of the island.
And they were exporting the revolution, right, to South America.
Right, right. And there was already revolution.
I have one question out of all this. Does Cubans, do they drink their sodas in bags, like in the plastic baggies, like El Salvadorians?
Does Cubans...
No, by that look, I'm saying no.
No, no, we lick it off of the thighs of our women.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Good
answer. No plastic bag.
Yep. 2,000 points. You get it.
So do you have a feeling that at a certain point, fiddle mellowed and like people quit getting killed and jailed? Like, was it just like, is it, I mean, I'm assuming for the past little while it hasn't been quite that brutal there, but I might be completely wrong.
Well, there's been more openness. Okay. There has been more openness, but I think it's also a war of attrition. He just kept getting rid and get, and that now you have to realize there are people in Cuba who are 50 plus years old that have known nothing but fiddle.
Sure.
Or fiddle, as he's called.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. I mean, you know, so that has a part of it. That's all they know.
And they have a sense of like someone's watching that whole thing, like the one in prison.
Absolutely.
Guard. Like, yeah, they don't know if your buddy is cool or not. Like, should I talk? I'm not going to say anything bad. Let's just,
Yeah. The neighbor's your friend, but is he really watching you? Yeah. Like, is he saying something to somebody? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. There's the big brother. Rough. The big brother keeping it real. Yeah.
Yeah. They didn't have a communist party for about the first 10 years. But once it was organized, very highly organized, so you have these neighborhood watches, but instead of figuring out who's breaking into somebody's home, you're trying to figure out who's talking against the revolution.
Yeah.
So that kind of
makes sense, though.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So did you guys read very much on the various assassination attempts?
Oh, yeah. I read all about it. Yeah.
Because there's some pretty fucking crazy schemes that were launched to kill Fidel, none of which obviously worked.
Yeah. I read all of them.
Let me tell you one from the CIA, though, just real quick that I read.
This is almost all of them are from the CIA. Yeah. I mean, so they're the ones who were trying to
kill my thing. Like, before we even get into this, like, how do you not kill him if you want him dead? We can kill our own presidents, but we can't kill Fidel Castro.
He has a bunch of fake bearded guys. There's like four of them. Yeah.
Oh, so it's like the Saddam Hussein fucking. Yeah.
Right.
They all look the same.
racist.
The CIA had a plot to use something called a depilatory chemical to cause Castro's beard to fall out.
Yes.
Like that was an actual written plan on paper.
That would kill him.
Yes.
It was
psychological warfare.
It was like reverse Rogaine.
They wanted to poison him with something called thallium salt, which makes your hair follicle stop producing. And they knew it wouldn't kill him, but they thought it was even better because they honestly thought if his beard fell out, that everyone would lose respect for him.
Everybody knows your beard gives you power.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Did you see his claim for why he has a beard?
No.
Because he saves 10 working days per year by not shaving.
Wow.
That's how much time. He calculated the time that he saved.
He's like the fucking Cuban Steve Jobs. Jesus Christ. Really?
Steve Jobs with a machine gun and a beard.
Save 10 working days. Get the fuck out of here. Go to sleep, motherfucker.
He did the math.
So famously, they tried to kill him with an exploding cigar.
That's awesome.
Like this the gag that you put course, in the cigarette.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, the old exploding cigar.
In 1967, a cop from New York City revealed that he had been prepositioned by someone with federal ID who wouldn't say who they were with or anything, and that this cop was going to be on Castro's security detail while he came to visit the United Nations in 1960, and they wanted them, they wanted this cop to give him some cigars on behalf of the NYPD, and the cigars were explosives that would have been powerful enough to blow half of his head off.
If you could get a cigar into his hand, why would you not just put poison in there, all sneaky status?
Or shoot him in the face. Shut the fuck up.
You just end up with the Looney Tunes blackface.
I don't know.
You conspire to get somebody close to him and you don't kill him.
Well, let me tell you more because these are weird fucking.
Do we not know Gracie Jiu-Jitsu at this point?
This is why I wonder about these assassination attempts. There's a girl named Marita Lawrence who was one of his mistresses. And she later worked for the FBI on doing different things, but told by the CIA to to feed him poison capsules, even to the point that she took the poison capsules and got them into where Fidel was, but like a fucking dumbass, apparently she put the poison capsules in her cold cream because that was the only way she could get them in there. So by the time she went to get them out of the cold cream, they had dissolved in the cold cream, so she couldn't poison than Fidel.
Like a bad movie.
She like made him eat a thing full of cold cream, which would have been a hard sell.
She could have gave him syphilis or something. I mean, Jesus Christ.
The Senate Intel Committee in 1975 said that it had concrete evidence based on documents that it had uncovered of a CIA plan that Castro was an American lawyer named James B. Donovan would go down to negotiate with Castro to get different Bay of Pigs prisoners released. And they wanted him to give Castro a wetsuit because he liked to swim and go diving and so forth. And their plan was to fill the wetsuit with spores and bacteria that would give him a skin disease.
Are you fucking kidding me?
No, I'm not fucking kidding you. And this was announced by the Senate Intel Committee.
We beat
on
the goddamn
floor
Nazis
in 1975.
And fucking this bullshit is what they come up with. Where's the Nazi scientists?
They had a CIA agent try to deliver him poison cigars, but the CIA agent supposedly got cold feet and backed down. They made plans that they couldn't execute. They wanted to have divers plant brightly colored explosive conch shells.
Shut the
where
fuck
Castro
up.
Went diving.
You can't so make that this shit
is,
up.
You he would fucking see, making no, this shit no, up. This so is he fucking
would,
bullshit.
He would see the conch shells and he would swim towards them because they were bright and very nice and then they would shiny. Explode.
Dave is a fucking science fiction writer.
And this then finally,
I am fucking embarrassed.
Okay, the closest they came to killing him was in 1963.
When they fed him dog food,
they had a CIA agent try to kill him by poisoning his milkshake, and the CIA agent took the poison, had it in the freezer, a poison pill that he was going to break into his milkshake, but the poison pill froze to the side of the freezer and he couldn't get the pill off, and when he tried it broke apart in his hands
and he died.
So he didn't have the poison anymore to put in his milkshake. And I understand that
I will drink
his milkshake,
milkshake
was better than yours.
Yeah,
his milkshake was better than
and
yours
and he brings all the boys to the yard. That's his right. Milkshake.
So
this is fucking absolutely ridiculous assassination attempts.
Multiple attempts.
Assassinations.
Have another drink. Multiple
assassinations
to kill him, and they all kept failing. And
those
even,
are horrible. Why would you be that close and not just fucking kill him?
I have no idea.
This is ridiculous. I don't think. I think they wanted a paper trail of them trying to kill him, but they didn't want to kill him.
Well,
one
of the conspiracy theories is that he was actually a CIA agent and
I agree.
They didn't want to kill him.
I agree.
And they think he was a plant by the CIA in the first place. The CIA wanted the general overturned. They wanted someone who would get cozy with the Soviet Union so they could get key evidence from the Soviet Union. They could feed key evidence to the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. I tried to read as deeply as I could into this conspiracy theory, but it got pretty fucking weird. It said that he was on the payroll of Citibank, the CIA, and Chevron. And when I got to the point that said that he got his CIA paychecks from a Yugoslavian girl from Greenwich, Connecticut, who used to go to Cuba to sell soap, I just kind of said, nope.
What do you mean? That sounds legit.
That was my threshold for the conspiracy.
The soap dealer?
I don't know if you guys ran into other money? Castro conspiracies or assassination things. Or
I think you covered them.
No, the dark market, because of their economic thing, was kind of cool. Like,
oh, break that down.
I mean, I don't have a ton on it, but basically they do, you know, they work for the state, so they work all day and make $2. And for those people that don't have another job outside of that, they work for what's called the dark market. So like some old man sells newspapers on the porch because he didn't sell all the newspapers for the state. And so people go buy it from him first instead of the state so that he gets money. The other thing would be something like illegal popsicles, like because of the restrictions are so firm that you're not even allowed to have a privatized business of any sort. That
so there's no ice cream menu.
Something like, yeah, like selling popsicles is actually breaking the law. So it's just crazy the things that they have to do to try to sustain themselves.
Their black market is like Walmart.
I bet they have drugs and stuff, but I mean, I'm sure there is, you know.
That's
but
crazy.
It's like that was the thing, like, ooh, you're breaking the law when you wake up and buy the newspaper. Like I watched a girl, she's like, I started the day by breaking the law again, you know, but maybe they just don't enforce it because they know that if you pay someone $2, they have to have another job outside of their state job.
Right.
Yeah. So it becomes not the 1%, but the 99% yeah. that have to do this just to make yeah. it by.
It's the right. norm. And yeah. they know that even though yeah. they can make the rule, they have to allow it to happen or else everything's going to crumble because everyone's going to be starving in the street and riot. If you take away their popsicles and newspaper,
yeah.
that's that's the final straw.
I mean,
you know?
Yeah. how much of 43 square miles can 12 dudes control? That's what I'm wondering. So, you know, you get that, you know, newspaper salesman, popsicle salesman.
I think we're going to make the Aquafina wall instead of the whiskey wall. So this never happens to Brad again. And then if Brad's not allowed to drink whiskey anymore. And just because you didn't study doesn't mean you have to yell at us the whole time. If someone else is saying something, it's a fact.
No.
You could just
I don't
listen.
Have to believe it. Don't get mad because the last episode I didn't believe you.
I'm not mad. My ear just hurt.
There was no clipping at all involved in this episode.
So one other Cuban thing that I wanted to look into was the whole notion of Guantanamo Bay, like not like digging into what goes on there and all that shit. That's probably its own episode. But I've always just been like, why the fuck is this there? Like, why do we have military base in Cuba?
And how do we have control of it?
And I looked into it, and apparently in 1903, we signed a lease for this chunk of land and we give them $4,085 a year to lease this land.
You said it. I'm just saying no, that's yes, a really 4, small amount.
It used to be 2,000.
Okay.
But it went up to $4,085.
So we pay $4,085 a month or a year for yes. Guantanamo Bay.
Yes. They, they cashed the check once during the revolution. Otherwise it's never been cashed. So we send them the check every year. They right. never cash it. They go to the UN on the regular and say, what the fuck? Like, get them off of our country. Like, we're not paying this lease. Like, they signed a lease with a government that doesn't even like two governments ago, right. like, but somehow they're still there. Like, there's Guantanamo yeah, Bay yeah. and the legal, according to the contract that we
it's we're squatters following. Rights.
Yeah.
It's because we get our PG&E bill there.
Right.
And so we have proof. And so it's just, it falls under squatters rights. You have to get the sheriff.
It's officially supposed to be,
they don't have a sheriff.
to tell you how old the lease is, it's a coaling station, which is where the ships would go to load their hulls with coal that they burn in order to keep sailing.
Yeah.
That's what Guantanamo Bay operate is. Off of. And it's a naval base, but the only Baskin-Robbins, McDonald's, Subway, KFC, A&W, Pizza Hut, Taco Bell, and Starbucks on the island are all on Guantanamo Bay.
It's all one store.
It's all in
Chevron,
one place. I guess the ultimate answer is it's a naval base. And if Cuba really wants to say we're taking it back, it's like, well, then fucking come fight our naval base.
Right,
yeah. So it's like, you know, it's not like it's a fucking Home Depot. It's a fucking naval base. Like
it's like the forbidden area of
Cuba. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. They just ignore it, and they talk to the UN all the time and say, get this the fuck off of our land, and the UN obviously doesn't listen. Yeah. And I just thought that was a very strange.
It was basically a partial payment. So until the 1890s, Cuba is still a part of Spain mm-hmm. as a territory. Mm-hmm. Then there was a Cuban revolution to lose that connection to Spain. And the US in the very early 1900s comes in and helps
right.
with that, with this and Teddy Roosevelt, the Rough Riders, all that bullshit on the island. And as a partial payment, they basically get this base.
Right.
And at one point, we tried to buy Cuba from Spain, but one of our ships exploded and we publicly blamed Spain yes. for it, even though it was like crew malfunction, blew up their own ship on yeah, accident.
The USS
they just needed
Maine.
A reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we blamed Spain.
Well, there's all kinds of conspiracy theory around that, too, that we actually on purpose yeah. blew up the boat just to
I'm
cause
sure that's,
a false
that's
flag.
Probably what it was.
Blew up yeah. our own boat.
It's crazy yeah. that DMX and the Rough Riders were involved in that.
they were down so there ago. And they were involved.
I don't even know who that is.
Yeah.
You wouldn't.
No.
You don't hear them.
I don't even
trees.
Know who that is.
So at the end of the day, with the idea of opening up Cuba, Renee, do you think, I mean, are more Cubans for it? Are more Cubans against it? Like, is there we don't want the, you know, McDonald'sization of Cuba, or do they want it
they
opening
want
up? Or like, I mean, what's the debate
yeah,
that's going on?
I think more and more younger Cubans, you know, under 30 are for opening up relations.
Yeah, right. You know, you would think, it's still music, the music culture, the internet, you know what I mean? The culture's hit. They already know about it.
Yeah. Netflix
and cheeseburgers, like I always
say. That's right.
Netflix and chill. They want it.
But there's this still sizable older community that still has this idea that somehow they're going to go back and get what was taken from them. They're going to go back and it's going to somehow change Cuba. That, you know, that ship left a long time ago. There is no Cuba to go back to.
Yeah,
the Cuba of the 1950s hasn't existed for a long time.
No.
But so there's a split. I think younger generations more and more are open to it. Older generations are still somehow holding on to this idea.
And I think, I mean, that's another thing that I keep, it's because I hear a lot of people say, you know, like you said, your brother wants to go before, like, you know, while Cuba is still genuine.
Yeah, really likes ham sandwiches.
Right. Well, but I mean, to me, that's part of the thing. It's like I hear people say that it's going to be sad and that you're going to lose a certain amount of culture if you start opening all these hotels and everything. But it's like, isn't a whole lot of that culture something that isn't all that bad to lose? Like a culture of fucking isolation and poverty
communism?
And fucking like repression. And it's like, are we just romanticizing things that we kind of fantasize Cuba is supposed to be like, and we're sad that that won't be there anymore when it isn't there
exactly
in the first fucking place?
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. We have this romantic view of the revolution that somehow we go back in time to the US of the 1950s.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's not so great for the people that are actually living there all the time.
No.
Yeah, it's like white people getting mad about, you know, black people saying nigga. You know, like they're
it's
upset
exactly
about that.
Like that. And what the fuck?
Yeah. No. Hear me out. You guys laugh.
Heavy on water.
No. It's something you don't know about. That's like saying I'm upset about Cuban culture and I have no idea about it. You know what I mean? Like you guys laugh and whatever, but that's it's the same thing. Like you have no idea about what Cuba is and what it was, but yet you're upset about it. You know, so
no, I can see that. Yeah. No, they are upset. I mean, they're upset about losing something that doesn't fucking exist in the first place. Yeah. Like
and that's
they're
exactly
upset about losing a Disney version. Yeah. Like they're upset that their Disney version of Cuba that they're going to get is upsetting the Disney version of Cuba that exists in their head.
Exactly.
When realistically,
it never happened.
Right.
It was never there.
I think their version of Cuba is only ever going to exist if Hilton opens up a chain, and it's like because they're gonna capitalize
and makes it a destination point.
Right, and it's gonna be Cubanissimo jazz everywhere, and it's gonna be those shirts, and it's gonna be like rum, and it's gonna be all this shit that the general Cuban population hasn't had access to in fucking forever.
I wouldn't be surprised if they started reproducing like 50s cars. You know what I mean?
I wouldn't be surprised either.
Like they open a
to keep
car
that
factory.
Vibe. Yeah, keep that vibe.
That'd be rad.
Yeah, and it's all something that nobody even knows about because we weren't able to go and experience it, you know?
Right.
So you're getting fed whatever they want to feed you. You know what I mean? So that's what I mean by that. You know, like it might've been a weird analogy.
Yeah.
Like the spaghetti and tuna or whatever. What is it from the fucking, from the hot girl?
Put the shovel down.
Yeah. Whatever.
You almost had me until you brought up the spaghetti.
Well, it's like it might have made sense to me, but I'm just saying like that. It's something that I've never experienced the culture, but to say that I know about the culture is not. It's not true.
Right.
You know, I don't know anything about it.
Yeah, I have.
So
if
I went to Cuba, whatever's there would be what it was.
Right. That's now the culture.
Know.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
No,
and that, I think that's probably 99% of America, you know, or the world, you know? So,
So do you, I mean, you think a grand motion, like a lot of people that I've read have said that like a lot of people are calling for Obama to like take the same stand that like Reagan took about bringing down the wall in East Germany. Mm-hmm. And like, if the president was actively saying we have to stop this embargo and like publicly doing it, that it would happen more quickly. I mean, do you think that's ever going to happen? Do you think a grand declaration is going to happen? That's going to change things? Do you think it's just going to be a trickle effect that's gradually going to change things?
My prediction would be that it's going to be more like a trickle effect because the president can't actually undo the embargo.
Sure.
The way it was set up, it has to actually be changed by Congress. And as long as there's a disconnect between Congress and the presidency, it's
going to
be a trickle effect.
Yeah.
It's going to be a trickle because that's what it'll take.
It can be like decriminalization, though, where it's like it's not legal, but it's decriminalized. So just look the other way.
I think that's a good analogy.
Yeah, I think that's a good analogy.
Point,
yeah.
I think this is one case.
I was going to use nigga, but someone already used that analogy.
You can't steal my shit, man.
I think it's one case where corporate lobbyists might actually help someone because I think once Hilton and once Starbucks and once all these companies realize how much fucking money they can make being in Cuba, they're going to start lobbying Congress to change those fucking laws.
Follow the money.
Exactly. Yep. You know, and
the Cubans have $5 a cup, though. That's what I want to know. Like $5 coffees. Like, do they have that money?
Well, they won't drink the coffee. They'll just sell it.
No, true.
To rich.
Yeah, because that on the coffee episode, we talked about that. Rich. Most of the people that make the coffee don't actually get to drink the coffee. Yeah,
no, it's for rich, fat Americans.
It's worth more than to sell it. Yeah.
Right.
True. Yeah. And they don't make enough money to buy it, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, like, that's a weird thing. You know, there'll be Starbucks and hotels there, but they won't be able to. They'll be working there, but never be able to experience it themselves.
Yeah. Although if they work there, they'll get a free pound every month.
So. Maybe.
And all the sandwiches at the end of the day.
We didn't talk about cocaine.
All the ham sandwiches. Yeah.
Yeah, all the ham sandwiches you can eat. That's horrible. The Bay of Pigs comes to real life.
I feel like
isn't the famous Cuban cuisine actually like a cocaine? Ham sandwich that's like...
Well, there is the famous Cuban sandwich, which is pork and ham.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So we're not far off from the ham sandwich.
Right.
I'll take a Cuban.
What's the cool name? Do the thing where you're like Pepsi, Mountain Dew, cilantro. Like, do the thing where it's like, what's the ham sandwich really called? There's a name like Cuba Jamon or something.
Cuba Jamon. What? Un sandwich cubano.
I knew you had it.
Not as good. The pronunciation wasn't as clear as the dude passerby or in Spanish, but it'll have to do.
Yeah, I understood nothing.
Yeah. So, all right, that's all I got.
Is that all you got? I think we're done then because I don't have anything.
Did you ever?
No, I didn't. And I admitted it up front.
He did.
Because it was like, hey, we're talking about Cuba. What the fuck are we talking about? Like, are you fucking kidding me?
All right.
We're talking about the United States. Really? That's fucking amazing.
All right. I got a couple shout outs. You got any shout outs?
No, I got them out.
Facebook, Ian Meager sent us a picture of his Yucateco hot sauce, and he's making tri-tip marinade with it, apparently. So I do that myself. Isabel Arnold in Oregon gets drunk and listens to our show, and then drunk messages us.
I get drunk and listen to our show, too. So does Brent. Just not today. He's being a fucking stickler.
Someone put a mic in front of you, though, so you get to participate. Mm-hmm. Tony Dutcher also chimed in, and then Ryholt47 on Instagram said he loves the show. So I just wanted to say hi to them and make them feel famous for a minute. Yeah. We forgot at the top of the hour, and probably have to cut it back in, to thank Yucateco Hot Sauce.
I thought we just started talking cigars and thighs.
And
that shit, I had a plan, and that shit threw me off. This motherfucker over here.
You guys just laughed really loud like Mark and Brian and kept saying thighs a lot. El Yucateco Hot Sauce, it's amazing. I keep it in my pocket, and I pull hot sauce out of my pocket when I'm happy to see
you.
That's no lie. I put it on your breakfast sandwich, whether you want it or not.
Yeah. Secret sauce on the breakfast sandwich. That's how we get down.
So if you can find it, it's they do have green and red at Walmart and at smaller stores and Mercados. They do have all the flavors. If you have trouble finding it, hit us up on social networking, and I will find out what corner store next to you has it, if it's available. If not, we'll figure out how you can get it. You can buy it on the website for sure.
We have a special app that tells us where it's at.
They do have a cool app, and you just get to spin the bottles around. Spin the bottle Yucateco. It's kind of cool.
Nice.
Yeah. Dark Side Graphics for making our t-shirts, beer koozies, and they're actually looking at making some stickers for us. Let's tell you guys about that.
I got a new clothing company, Kevin. We got to do it.
All right. Digital Creations for coffee mugs, travel mugs, stickers, all that cool stuff they make. And then Salt 7 for our sensory deprivation float center down the street. And if you're within a couple hours and you're feeling like a drive, or you're in the area, you should check it out.
Or you're rich and you can fly.
And if you haven't done that, have you heard about that? Have you done that?
Yeah.
Yeah. You should check it out for sure. So it's a cool thing, and I'm going to do it this week to get over this podcast with Brad yelling in my ears. So that's all I got. And Christ,
large vaginas.
What else you got?
Salt7.com, and it's salt7even.com, and you can check them out. Schedule an appointment today. Let them know you heard it from the Sofa King podcast. And if he still has shirts, you can get a free one.
If you mention us, he's supposed to give you a free shirt.
So, yeah, get a free shirt. No biggie.
He's a nice guy. He'll take his shirt off and give it to you.
Yeah, he will.
You heard it here.
Yeah, he's a very nice guy.
Yes, he is a very nice guy. So pretty much that's it. I want to thank Renee for joining us today about Cuba and sharing his experiences and his life. And we appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Had a fun time. And is that it?
That's it.
All right. Help me return.
Candela, se quema la chumbamba. Candela, Quemándome yo, ay, ay, me que se queme el mundo entero.
Candela.